also very entrepreneurial. You know, you are running that business. You're looking at it from the top, you know, the top sort of sales pipeline and the top line revenue all the way down to the bottom. And what's great about this place, it's full autonomy and I almost run it as if it's my own. I treat it like it's my own money. So you are a generalist.
I'm Becca Poutney, wedding business marketing expert, speaker and blogger. And you're listening to the Wedding Pros Who Are Ready to Grow podcast. I'm here to share with you actionable tips, strategies and real life examples to help you take your wedding business to the next level. If you are an ambitious wedding business owner that wants to take your passion and use it to build a profitable, sustainable business doing what you love, then you're in the right place. Let's get going with today's episode. Today, I'm chatting with Richard Kidner, General Manager of Mulberry House, an award-winning wedding and events venue in the Essex countryside. Throughout his career, Richard has worked at multiple properties, giving him a breadth of knowledge of the industry. As well as his venue work, Richard also now sits alongside me on the advisory board of the newly formed UK Wedding Association as the Hospitality and Venues Advisor. Richard, welcome to the podcast.
Hi, Becca. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for being brave enough to come and be on an episode. I know when I asked you, you said, I thought you'd never ask, but really, I'm not sure you did really want to be on the podcast.
Congratulating you on your award, which I can see in the background there. And I was like, oh, when you asked me, I was very flattered. Yes, so thank you very much.
Well, I'm thrilled you've come on. I think you might be the first official GM from a venue that's been on the podcast. I've had venue owners, I've had venue like wedding coordinators, but I don't think I've had a manager. So we'll come back to that a little bit later. But before we get there, I always like to get to know the history of the person on the podcast so that my listeners know why they should listen to you. So take me back. How did you end up in the world of hospitality in the first place? Was it something you always wanted to do or did you fall into it?
Yeah, you know, I followed my dad. He was in hotels his entire career, and I was that young kid that used to go in on Christmas Day after you've had lunch and walk around the kitchens holding your dad's hand as a 4, 5, 6-year-old, whatever it was, and always impressing chefs and all the buzz and the action of hospitality. And yeah, it's kind of in my DNA is what I say. My parents were always a bit like, are you sure you want to go into this? But yeah, I did hospitality management at Westminster University. I got on the Marriott International Graduate Scheme. And I worked my way up with Marriott in 2009, I think it was when, you know, there was a sort of an economic downturn, and Marriott being a big corporate company as it is, you know, kind of structures and make redundancies were made. And I moved off, went to work for private hotel companies, went to work for the Exclusive Collection, which was, you know, I found a role in a hotel that was near me and it looked really great, but I didn't quite know much about the group. And it was actually one of the best jobs I've had, you know, really great company. Danny Pecorelli, fantastic, the owners of Exclusive. They do fine dining restaurants and fantastic country house hotels, but also they do amazing events, be it in the MICE sector or weddings and stuff. So had a fantastic 6.5 years working for that company, moved on from there, just kind of kept in the country house hotel kind of roles, really got my first GM role working for a group called the Vineyard Group. They've now rebranded as Donington Group. That was really nice. And that was a busy sort of wedding. I think we did about 140 weddings a year in the Tithe Barn. Then I moved, done a few, then I went to a corporate property and then back to Mulberry House. I worked for Mulberry for a few years. It was almost a bit of a stopgap actually, and then ended up coming back during COVID times. The owners the second generation was coming through, not necessarily their background in terms of this industry, and they knew they wanted to make change and they wanted to get going with it. They wanted to invest and they need somebody to run it for them and sort of lead that and spearhead it. So it was really exciting to come back here in October 2020. Yeah, so 5 years now.
You've been there 5 years. And as I said at the beginning, you are known as the GM, the general manager. And I actually don't really know what that involves. So I understand what it means to be, you know, the wedding sales girl or the wedding on the day coordinator. But for people listening, they often hear, oh, I've got to ask my GM about that. I've got to ask my GM about that. I can't say yes without asking my GM. What does it actually mean?
It is in the title, isn't it? You're a generalist. You are, you are the people kind of HR-y kind of person. You're managing people and their careers and how you can nurture them, look after them. You are thinking about health and safety and anything, you know, in terms around legislation and keeping everything and everyone safe. Next minute, you're a marketeer. And you're looking at all the things that, you know, that the work we've worked on together, for example. Then you're looking at social media. Then you're looking at the operation. And then you're talking to the chef and menu planning. It's really varied. And this venue, we're predominantly wedding venue, but ultimately it is kind of more, it isn't a hotel. We don't try and position it that way, but it runs in the terms of the departments we've got, similar to that of a small hotel. So you wear many hats, but it's great because you're, you're also very entrepreneurial. You know, you are running that business. You're looking at it from the top, you know, the top sort of sales pipeline and the top line revenue all the way down to the bottom. And what's great about this place, it's full autonomy and I almost run it as if it's my own. I treat it like it's my own money. So you are a generalist for sure.
You're a generalist, but the buck stops with you on a lot of things because lots of people have to come back to you with ideas, or do they come back to you and they've got a problem?
Both, you know, and really try and encourage that proactivity of people. I think sometimes in a smaller business like this, you know, you do wear many hats, and I don't have loads of senior managers. I've got lots of people looking after certain areas, but I probably am, it's my own fault, maybe a bit more of a control freak, but a lot of it does come to me. So, you know, I don't have a sales manager who will, you know, a sales and marketing director, for example. A lot of it will, I have lots of great guys that will be proactive and working on sales activities and wedding planners, coordinators, but ultimately, it, you know, those ideas will stem with me, and then I'll push it to the team. So don't get me wrong, it's not just me throwing the ball; people are throwing it back, and that's the important thing. It can get quite frustrating at times if you don't have somebody to sort of, I always say that sort of analogy, but bounce the ball with. So
I think one of your strengths that I've observed from watching you and watching how you work with your team is the fact that you are so involved in the business, but also being out there as well. So often I'll speak at conferences and, you know, team members are sent to the conference, but they don't actually have any authority to make any change. And their manager isn't necessarily as engaged. They're not going to the conference themselves or going to the training. They're just sending other people off to do it. And then what I see is that they then go back all enthusiastic and want to make the changes, but the manager's not bought into it and just says, no, just keep doing it how you've always done it. Do you think that's been a proactive decision on your behalf to be actually more involved in the whole process, or is that just who you are as a person?
I think it's probably who I am. I've always run, as a GM, I've always run, I mean, Mulberry is 25 bedrooms, it's a £3 million turnover property, but you know, as a GM, I've never really gone over four and a half million. So it's still small properties. And I think, and that's probably how I've been running now for the last 10 plus years of my career. So you kind of get, that's how you just work and how you operate. So you need to, I think small businesses, you need to have your fingers on the pulse. You need to know what's happening. Yesterday we had an open day, wedding open day, and I'm out doing tours. I'm meeting couples. I want to listen to what they say. I want to look at their body language, their reactions to the product, be it our, you know, if we're doing refurb work or when they look at our price points and look at the team. So if you're not there on it, then, you know, you're not really going to be able to know what's going on. If you're in a much bigger property or multiple properties, if you're running, you know, multiple sites, it is different, you know, but I still think it's important to show up every now and then and keep your sort of eyes on everything. So, yeah, it's probably just the way my career has evolved. I'm sometimes quite conscious of that. You think, am I really getting involved with this? Should I be getting involved with this? But, yeah, maybe it's a few good habits and a few that I could maybe tweak.
I used to love that TV show, Undercover Boss. Have you ever watched that? Especially when they go in America. And the person right at the top who has all of these restaurants or cafes, whatever is underneath them, goes down and spends some time right at the bottom. And they learn so much. And I think sometimes the higher up in a company we get, we do lose touch. And actually just going out and doing a tour, you're going to see a huge amount of what's going on for your team, what's going on with the consumers, compared to just being sat in an office.
Yeah, quite. And I think, you know, salespeople ultimately are, you know, they want to sell. And if there's a way they can do things that might be easier or might have to mention, you know, then they will. And, you know, I can then go, actually, are we undercutting ourselves here? Are we a bit too cheap? Or, you know, I just think if you're not part of it, then you just don't really, yeah, you've got to feel it. And that's hospitality to me. You know, generally it could be weddings, could be hotels, could be restaurants. You know, you feel it. You can walk into your property within 5 seconds of walking in. You know what's going on. You've got a vibe. You can feel if it's a good service, if the guests are happy, if the staff are on top of everything, if they're organised, if they're not. And yeah, so I think it's part of that kind of hospitality instinct. And I think you've either got it or you haven't, in my opinion.
Absolutely. So you've been in the industry a long time and you've been at Mulberry for the last 5 years. When you reflect, particularly over the last 5 years at Mulberry, what are some of the lessons you've learned over that time and how have you seen the industry shifting?
It's a funny one. I joined the property, came back, was working in a slightly bigger sort of more corporate role before. And I kind of went in quite, but I did a small stint at the property before. So I knew the people, or some of the people, I knew the product, I knew what I wanted to do with the place before I even walked in. So we went in quite aggressive and we were still in restrictions, but we were doing viewings. We were really going for it. So it's been each year, it's like year on year, we've seen progression, you know, be it winning awards, be it like every year we've grown the business. And then this year is going to be the same. So we've almost been like COVID/recession proof. And everyone goes, oh, we're struggling. And I'm like, well, we're not. We're still growing. We're still busy. So what have I learned? I think more than anything is when you join a small business and you go independent, one thing I have noticed is that, you know, it's on you. And I think I've been playing the same tricks maybe for the last 5 years. And I think one thing I've noticed is, and, you know, you've just said it then, you know, go out to industry events, go and speak to other venues, get consultants in to give you a hand or give you another opinion. I think that's really important. So, you know, eventually you will run out of tricks or you might be playing the same cards. And yeah, just keep yourself out there and keep fresh ideas coming in. That's probably what I think I've learned is that, you know, you've got to change things up. And the couples that are booking, the trends are constantly changing. Consumer buying habits. I just, you know, we talk a lot about Gen Z, but, you know, it's also how people want to spend their money, the experiences. There's so much going on at the moment. And if you don't stay current, you're really going to fall behind. So that's probably the biggest thing I've learned since coming back working in a small firm.
You know, it's probably hard to blow your own trumpet and say why you're amazing, but I want to encourage you to do that just for a moment, because there will be venues listening to this and thinking, well, I want to be recession proof. Actually, we are really struggling. What's Richard done that we're not doing? So what do you think it is that's made you and the Mulberry House team survive this period and continue to grow? Are there things that you think this is why we do it?
It's really easy. Passion. You've got to have a bit of fire in your belly. You want to innovate and you've got to be hungry. And that's something I think I do quite well. You know, I'm not the smartest guy. I'm sure there's other salespeople out there that might do things better or whatever. But for me, you know, if you live and breathe it and you're hungry and you love it, then I think you're going to keep going. And that's you know, I'm not going to give you any sort of great business kind of textbook answers to that. But if you've got some fire in your belly and you do this and that kind of enthusiasm and passion rubs off on your team, that's everyone follows suit. And that's as simple as that. Just I care. I want it to be right. You know, the team know if it's sloppy, they know I'm going to get upset. We also have really good fun. We look after the guys. And yeah, we just keep push. Like every year, it's just not an option to go backwards for us. You know, if we think we're going to do less weddings or the average spend's going back, it's just not an option. You know, we've been really fortunate. Our owners have put an absolute fortune into Mulberry in the last 5 years. And that's the really fun part as well as a GM is, oh, I'm going to have £500,000 this year to spend on the product and to innovate. And then all the couples come and they go, oh my God, this is amazing. I love it. So it's if you don't keep pushing and we can't keep doing the fun stuff. So yeah, it's hunger.
I also think there's something in what you said that we need to highlight even more. And it kind of comes back to what I said earlier, is that it's because you're passionate and that does come through the team as well. Because I think often what I see in venues is that the team are passionate and sometimes they're not getting that from the people above them. And actually, if we are in a position of leadership, if we are in a position of power, if we're an owner, if we're a manager, how we act and the culture that we set does determine a lot about the success of the other people around us. And if we're miserable and if we're saying nothing's working and if we're frustrated, that just spreads. Or alternatively, if our team have great ideas and are great people, but never have the freedom to be able to implement it, they just get disengaged and give up.
Totally. And you know, we mentioned it on last week at the launch of the Wedding Association. You know, culture is so important in a team. And, you know, wedding venues, a lot of us, we almost have the same sort of facility, amenity, you know, and you know, how do you stand out? And what are you buying here? You are buying the product. You are buying the wallpaper. You might be buying a marquee or a barn, but you're also buying the people. And if your team aren't passionate, so many people that come here for a viewing are like, oh my God, we just love your team. Like the way, you know, the way I just know you're going to look after us. I know we can trust you. And that's also why they book. I think a really healthy culture with your team is the number one priority for any sort of leader in any business, but especially in the sort of wedding market.
Yeah, definitely. And also I think one poor team member can bring down the whole thing as well. I'll give you an example. I was at an event venue this weekend speaking at a conference, and I've actually just written an email to the GM to complain about a team member, more so not because I want anything in return, but to make them aware that this person will be losing the business, because I've never experienced someone be so rude to me in my entire life. And they were in charge of the conferencing and events. Now, obviously they don't know who I am, but that shouldn't matter. They should still treat me with the normal dignity and respect. And the line, you'll love this, Richard. So I was there to keynote the conference. So I wasn't going into all the talks because I was working and doing everything at the same time. And I asked the lady, oh, can I buy a Diet Coke? And her response was, it's free with the conference.
if you're even part of this conference in the first place. I could not believe it. Yeah. I was like, what are you doing? And yet it was a beautiful hotel, a beautiful setting. The conference facilities were amazing. And it was another example of just how one team member who is having a bad day, negative, rude, made judgments, I don't know what, can bring the whole thing crashing down. Because if someone said to me now, should I hold a conference there? I would be like,
yeah,
no.
Let's spin it around the other way. You know, anyone has done their research on you, that if you're coming in to run this event and be the speaker, everyone knows that Becca likes a Diet Coke. Let's have it ready for you on arrival. Send out that email before you get in. How can you make this event better for you? The details, right? So yeah, I 100% agree. And I think we've all had that. And it's managing people in the business that aren't right is a huge challenge for sure. But I agree with you 100%. It's one of those things in the past that I've done it, you know, you sort of brush it under the carpet a little bit because you're busy. But yeah, it's time consuming. But the situation like that, these people have to be managed for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. So what's working for Mulberry right now? I don't know if you've got an overview of where your inquiries are coming from, but a lot of the time I get asked, well, you know, we're a venue, we want more inquiries, where should I be marketing? So for you as Mulberry, what do you think's working best for you right now in terms of marketing? Where do your inquiries come from on the whole?
Yeah, I think one thing that we're fortunate with, we are established. We've been doing weddings for a long time. I think that makes a huge difference. So locally, we are well known. And, you know, we've had thousands and thousands of people come through here. So that does help. I think a lot of people, if you're starting from scratch or you're a new business, you've got to think a little bit harder. But we, you know, we spend a lot of money on social media and sponsored ads. I think we could target it slightly better. I think that's super important. We use a number of the directories, not all of them. And that can really add up. You know, one thing we've really over the years is we've spent tens of thousands with some of these directories, and it's not, we weren't able to have anything tangible to tell us if it was actually paying off. So we can get to that later, but we rolled out a new CRM this year, and that has given us loads of tangible information, which is going to be huge for us in our decision making next year in terms of how much we want to spend on the directories. You know, I think good old fashioned, there's no, you know, wedding, whatever you want to call them, viewing days, wedding fairs, wedding shows, open house, whatever you want to call them, I think are super important. I kind of call them like labeled kind of days. And I think at the moment, a lot of couples like to, you know, they like to label it. We'll do viewing 7 days a week here. And if we did viewings on a Saturday morning, people are just booking a private viewing. But the reality is, if you just say, oh, come into our viewing morning, everyone just books in. So yeah, we're doing a lot of that this year. We've done loads more wedding shows, open houses than ever before, open evening, etc. And that's been really, really successful. We still, a lot of people moved away from wedding fairs, and I was guilty of that, and myself in previous properties. I don't want to do that. It's a waste of a day. You know, you get a lot of tie kickers and it's low spend. But you know, we work with a local company here, and we do two shows a year or wedding fairs a year. And we did one yesterday and we were packed. And we've got 16 inquiries. Five of those are holding, but they'd never heard of us or didn't know about us before this show was advertised. So, you know, try it. And I think if you're, even as an established wedding business, you know, we're still doing stuff like that. And I think it works out. And it's about banging the drum, isn't it, ultimately, and being heard. And if people can reach new customers that you can't or have different channels, then I think that's super important. So we don't do anything radical, but we're consistent with it and we keep pushing forward.
Yeah. And I think, again, going back to all of that, what you've talked about is the data is so important, because you can have an opinion, a wedding show's not worthwhile for us or our team, it's a waste of time. And then you've done one and you've got some data, and actually you'll now be able to see whether you do get a return on investment, whether you do get those bookings, and whether or not it's worth it or not. And I think a lot of the time, particularly solo business owners that I work with, just make all of these their decisions on marketing on feeling. Oh, I feel like this doesn't work for me. I feel like directories work for me or they don't work for me. I feel like social media is where it should be. But actually, feeling is not that helpful. The data is incredibly important, and directories can work for you. But at the same time, I met with a venue the other week and I was doing a review of where they were at, and they were like number 39 of the venues in their area. And I was like, no one's going to number 39. I'm sorry to break it to you, but you know, if you're lucky, if someone scrolled down 4 or 5, but if you're on 39, this is not, I cannot see how you're going to turn this around.
Exactly. 100%.
Okay. So I came to work with you earlier this year and I did a full marketing review, and I came and worked with your team, which is how I've got to know your team and the venue in quite so much depth as I had. Now, I think it's quite a brave decision for anyone whenever they come to work with me to say, can you do a marketing review of my business? And I always say, do you really want to know? Because it is basically taking your baby that you've spent ages on and handing it over to someone else and letting them pull it apart and say, this doesn't work. Have you tried this? Have you thought about this? And it can be a quite a scary experience. So what was that experience like for you? And also, how did it go down with your team? Because sometimes they can be quite precious about the way they work as well.
I think we, for me, going into January 25, like I mentioned earlier, I was a bit conscious of us sort of playing the same sort of Richard tricks. And I was, you know, you don't want it to be the Richard show, you know? So that's why I kind of went out there myself proactively to network a bit more and see what's going on in the industry and go to more events. And obviously that's where I come across yourself. And when I found out you could come in and do a full audit of our obviously the sales process and putting in an inquiry and also of our competition and look at our social media, I was like, this is amazing. It's just what we need. And the team were really keen for it as well. And that's the sort of culture we've got here where it's not, you know, we're the best and we do it our way and we're not going to change. We're really open to that because ultimately it's going to result in more bookings. So yeah, it was a really, really great experience to get you on board. And we, you know, we welcome the feedback and the team were really, really receptive to it.
Okay, well, that's good. That shows the culture that you've built, because that could be the first hurdle is people even letting go of what they've done. So once we'd done that and I came and I presented the findings to you and your team, were there certain things that landed with you that made you think, ah, yeah, I hadn't thought about that?
Yeah. There's a few things you're like, oh God, we know that. But it's one of those things you just put to the back burner because you get busy. And there was loads of things like, well, that is a fantastic idea. Why haven't we thought of that sooner? How, you know, let's get it done. Let's integrate that and get it moving quickly. So it was, it was a bit of both to answer that question. You know, there was a lot of things there that you just think, oh, why aren't we doing this? This is silly. But there were some real big ticket items as well that took time. You know, you came up with a few ideas and we thought, okay, we need to do this, but it can't be implemented straight away. And then we kind of created our action plan and we went from there.
And it's always a marathon, not a sprint, because there's easy fixes like this button doesn't work or, you know, change the wording in this email. But actually some of the longer term fixes around the website and the SEO, they're bigger picture projects. Not everything is fixable overnight.
Yeah. I think the main thing was the website, wasn't it?
Yeah.
You know, the fact that people are inquiring on our website and they weren't getting the brochure quickly. You know, it was happening the next day when people were in the office, and we added that little bit of automation. Well, we've added a fair bit now, but we'll get to that. But that was a big ticket for me. I was like, why were we not doing this years ago?
Yeah, and I think that's one of the things that was most interesting for me to present, because I did inquire with your team and I inquired with all of your competitors at the same time. And I remember pulling up that thing on the screen, a table that I'd made that basically showed your team's response time and what you'd done exactly in line with the other competitors, and all of the other competitors had beaten you. I think that's a really stark thing to look at and think, yeah, we think we're keeping up with our competitors, but oh dear, we are already number five in the inbox because the other four have already replied. Yeah. And yeah, I think that was a big wake up call.
Yeah, because we were busy. Like I say, every year we were growing the business. So internally we're like, oh, we're doing a great job here. We're good. And it wasn't, I didn't start talking to you, for example, because, you know, the sales numbers were declining, inquiries were declining. It wasn't like that at all. It's that we wanted to be better, but it really was a highlight. I think, cool, we think we're okay, but actually, maybe we're not, you know?
And actually, that's the best time. And that's the best time for someone to speak. I think sometimes if people hit rock bottom before they decide they want to do something better, that's actually a really difficult client to work with. But actually, the best clients are the ones that are doing well, but see that they need to keep making the 1% improvements, because they're the ones who are going to stay ahead. Because otherwise, like you said, if you keep on doing the same things you've always done and it works for you, suddenly you realize it's just sloping away slowly because you haven't kept up with the competitors.
Yeah.
And then you hit rock bottom and you're like, help!
Yeah, it's too late. Oh, you know, 2 years for that pipeline to build up again and you're in trouble, you know, your cash flow is going to suffer. So no, we're really chuffed we did that process and we're going to continue it. You know, we're not going to stop either. It's going to be an ongoing thing.
So the big thing, let me cough. The big thing that came out from our session was that I realized that your team was still doing almost everything to do with weddings on an Excel spreadsheet or with lots of paper forms. And when we came and I worked with the team and we looked at your process, we realized actually there is a gap here. Maybe we do need to look at some kind of system. I know it was something you'd already been considering and you'd been thinking about yourself. And so I guess the timing worked. So we did look at implementing a system. The system we went with after you looking at various different options was Brightbeers. And we decided, right, we're going to get this going. Now, one of the hurdles I remember talking to you after the session about getting it going was like, the time it's going to take to set it all up because it is quite complicated and your team are very busy. And me and my team said, you know what, we can set it up for you. That's something we do. Give us your process. We'll set it up for you and get it going. Now, it was not an easy thing for us to set up in terms of, you know, you're not a small venue. You are a very busy venue with a very complicated process in some ways internally. And your team, it became apparent to me very quickly how many things they were doing for every single client. Incredible touch points, loads of upsells. But trying to take that from their heads and get it into a system was interesting, but also amazing at the same time, because it's now saved them so much time. So how have you seen the impact of starting to use a system over them just doing everything on a spreadsheet?
Yeah, it's true though, in so much time we'll put into Excel. But yeah, it's been great. So the initial impact straight away, bang, is sales. So the sales team, you know, the system's automated, it's chasing, we're getting tangible data. That's great. And I think it definitely saves time, it makes it consistent, and there's a process. So that's a huge plus. And we can see already what we've made in sales this year, you know, is I think we're like 45% up on what we've sold this year versus last year. So it's a huge factor of that is how we've automated the system and some of the other things we've done in our marketing processes and how we bring people in. But the wedding, so we call them wedding specialists here, but you might call them wedding coordinators or planners. So we, you know, in terms of their systems and their process and all the different sort of automations we put in, is going to save them loads of time. So we're still, it's funny because by the time we went live, we're sort of mid-summer. And then a lot of, obviously, the girls tend to be working 3 months or so ahead anyway with final details, which for couples. So we're kind of, a lot of that stuff is starting to be rolled out now as we go into 2026 planning. So we, you know, so the system, we haven't seen the full benefit fully yet from that side. And we will probably come spring when everything's on there. It was when we'll really tell the difference. What it has done, though, it just creates like a foolproof process. And I think that from the wedding planning point of view, it's just going to save them so much time. And they worked so hard with you, didn't they, to add in all these different steps that's going to make, and also make the couple's journey better. And we're really looking forward to the fact that couples can also log on the back end of the system and they can add information, be it around food choices and the menus. So yeah, no, it's great. It's exciting, but it's definitely, you know, you're not going to implement that system. And then once it's done, it's live and you're ready to go. It's going to take time to trickle in. So yeah, we're still work in progress on that side, and I think it'll be another few months and then it'll be done. But it's so far, it's so good.
And I think as well, when we work with the team, really it's only bookings that are coming in now since we set it up, and also then from January 26th. So they do still have some weddings that they're doing manually, and I can imagine, because I have got to know the team a little bit, that some of those processes are probably, they're thinking, oh, it's annoying now because I'm having to do this all myself. Yeah, whereas they're used to the other ones, some of it's going to be going automatically. But what's been amazing is the way that they've taken the system and then improved their own processes because they have the system. So talking about customer experience, when I worked with them and looked at, okay, once you get handed a booking, what is the process between that client booking and the wedding day? And for a lot of venues, that may be one meeting or one email in a 2-year period. Whereas your girl said, no, I want to make sure our couples are hearing from us pretty much every month until their wedding day, not to annoy them, not to sell to them, but to give them helpful, tangible advice to sort of help them plan different elements of their wedding along the way. So it doesn't all come in a final planning meeting. And so they can look at ways that they can upsell and add other things along the journey. And they came back to me with this huge list, which if you were to do everything manually would be an impossible thing to do. So things like every first year wedding anniversary, after a couple gets married at Mulberry House, they'll get an email on their wedding anniversary wishing them happy 1-year anniversary, which is a lovely thing to do. But if you're trying to do that times 150 and remember it all, it's quite difficult.
It's a job in itself, isn't it? Yeah.
As the system's now doing it for you. So I do think it's definitely alleviated a lot of their time. And I think it means they can now add in extra elements they didn't have before. From your point of view as a manager, what has it meant for you? Because you now can see a lot more data than you could before. And I guess that's only going to increase.
Yeah, for me, it's to be able to see facts and figures, and it might be boring. Maybe I look at it a little bit too commercially, but I know that we've set this up now. And so the couples are going to benefit from this and the team are going to benefit from it. So for me now, it's just great. Like, I can sit with our accountant, and, you know, small businesses, cash flow forecasts are important. And we're fortunate that we invest heavily in our properties. So next January, we're going to do another £450,000 in CapEx. But that cash flow has to be right. So now just looking at the cash flow forecast, you know, wedding businesses, deposits is a big thing in wedding venues. And you can just see everything when it's coming in, how it's been paid, when it's been paid, that part's automated. So the receipts are sent through and that's amazing. And then just looking at in terms of, you know, how the inquiries are coming in, how that's converting, who it's coming from. So for me, you know, to begin with, every day I was logging on, looking at my inquiries, who's come in, who, you know, just looking at each one and where they are in that sales funnel. Whereas now it's a little bit, okay, you get used to it and you tend just to look at more of the report section. But it's about, I suppose it's more of a control thing, isn't it? You know, it's now being controlled. And that's really quite comforting, to be honest.
Also, it means that now if there's an issue or a blip or you think things are down this month, it gives you a tangible place to go and look at what's going on. So you can see how many show rounds the team have done. You can see how many, you know, have been booked or no shows. You can see how many inquiries have come and the percentages of conversions from those inquiries. So at least it gives you tangible data to go in and look. And like you said, when you're making marketing decisions for next year or the year after, you can actually go in and filter and see, okay, well, we've had this many inquiries from this place. How many bookings have we had from this place? And I guess the more data that goes into the system and the more time people are using it, the more you're going to be able to use that data to your advantage. And yes, it does sound boring, but actually, I do think the most successful business owners are the ones that pay attention to the numbers and the data rather than the feelings, like I said 100%. Earlier.
If you're not making a proper informed decision, then you know it's not going to work, in my opinion. So we were doing a lot of this stuff before, but we're doing it manually. So it wasn't always 100% for right. Yeah, we weren't a million miles away, but now the that information is ready, click your fingers, it's there. So, you know, I felt as a business, we still had controls in place, but now this is just foolproof and it's so much quicker.
Yeah. And I think the other thing, I was talking to a venue about this the other day, is that you can, at least with the contact, guarantee every couple's going to have the same experience. Because what they were saying is like some couples, when they were quieter, they were making sure they touched base with them a lot and they were wishing them good luck on their wedding day. And then other couples that were in the middle of a really busy season were kind of slipping through the net. And so although in a little bit you lose the personal touch because the emails are automated, the couple doesn't necessarily know because they're written in a way that feels personalized. At least you know everyone's getting the same experience. So at 3 months before the wedding, they're all getting the same email. At 1 month before the wedding, they're all getting the same email. The day before the wedding, the day of the wedding, the day after the wedding, they're all having the same experience regardless of how busy your team are.
Yeah, 100%. But also there's a lot of, another side of it, there's a lot of directories out there that sometimes, you know, you can get a vast amount of inquiries and nothing really materializes. Well, now you don't have to worry about that. Because, I've been ghosted. When you're manually replying to every inquiry, you know, and then you don't hear back from X amount of them, it's quite demoralizing. Whereas now the system does that follow-up. And the team aren't wasting time on all these emails, where the reality is if you're going to receive, I'm making up the numbers now, but say you receive 80 or 90 inquiries a month, and the reality is only 10 of those couples come back to you, but then you're not manually chasing that up. The system does it. That's amazing because you're not wasting your time on, which I'm not saying they're not real inquiries, far from it, but my point is they're not necessarily always going to come back to you. They're just ticking boxes on multiple venues when they're at that stage on that booking platform, and then you're having to respond to loads of emails.
Yeah, and it basically is just adding as another sieve, isn't it? It's a filter system so that, yes, they've done an inquiry, then the system's going to email them until the point where they sieve through that. And if they're actually serious, they'll start talking to a human rather than having to have the automated emails.
100%.
Okay, so you've seen a lot in Mulberry House. You've seen the changes over the last 5 years. You see the changes in the industry since you've worked in it from a very young age as well. So you've seen a lot. What do you think the future holds? What do you think is going to happen in the future? And what do you think are some of the challenges venues are going to face over the next few years?
Yeah, really good question. I think I think wedding venues, you know, and we're maybe only just starting this part of our journey. I think the sustainability thing is really, really important. And I think if I was to stereotype, our venue is based in Essex. And I think your average Essex couple is not as worried about sustainability maybe as a couple, if you're maybe in central London or maybe if you're in the Cotswolds or, you know, more, you know, these sort of more country parts of the country. But that is something we're really going to work on over the next 5 years. I think that consumer kind of buying habit for weddings will be important. Couples will want to know more about sustainability. We're seeing it already. A lot of our couples, it's funny what they're forfeiting in their budget because they want to, you know, it's all about experiences in hospitality, has been for a long time. But I think it's interesting what couples are prepared to not have now in terms of, it could be venue styling, it could be less so food and beverage. I think that is more of an experience, but they definitely want to spend money in different ways. And I think venues need to innovate that now. You know, we're really working on our food and beverage offering going forward and how we can make the product reflect that, because again, it's all part of the experience. And you know, everything has to be Instagrammable. It's been like that for a long time. We get that, but it's taking it to the next level. So that's something we're working on. Great food and drink is always been a thing for us, but the days of really poor banqueting event food is, you know, you just can't get away with it anymore. Great cocktails, English sparkling wine, and, you know, and working that side of it. So that's definitely something we're going to do. And I think AI is, you know, it's scary, and it's, we were talking about this last week at an event, you know, and even the CRM is, our CRM Brightbiz is going to have some AI functionality coming out soon. Chatting to Eamon, who's one of the directors, and that kind of blew my mind. So yeah, that's something I think all good venue operators need to keep an eye on and make sure they're out there and talking to the right people about that. We're about to, next year, we're going to relaunch a whole new website, and we're going to throw quite a lot of money at that. And I'm almost thinking now to put the brakes on, because it's all about how AI is going to work for your business. So that's something I'm really keen to learn more about. And I think that's going, you know, you talk about the next 5 years of wedding venues, but how are our couples going to be buying from us in 5 years? It's going to be so different to how they buy now, and then what their expectation is. You know, couples now, the younger generation, I don't like stereotyping everybody in terms of like Gen Z, millennial, whatever else, but, you know, the people are a little bit more demanding. Couples potentially, in terms of they want more contact, they have a lot more questions, and I think they can be a bit like that on the day as well. And if couples are choosing not to spend money on styling but want to spend that on experiences, then the team on the day end up having to maybe do more in terms of dressing the room and how you set expectations of how that's done. So the team are definitely under more pressure than ever before in how they plan and execute the wedding. So I think that's something to really keep an eye on going forward. How we manage our bride and groom, how we exceed expectations, but how you manage that, because ultimately that's going to cost the business more money in terms of resource. So I think using technology will be a massive part in the planning, and then how you execute on the day is important. And we're looking at sustainable options for the couples that don't want to spend a huge amount of money on venue styling, how we can do sustainable options that will mean maybe a supplier will come in and do the setup, and it's kind of like the pre-loved kind of element we want to use rather than just throw away. So yeah, I think that's going to be really important as well.
Yeah, big things to face, actually. And it's interesting because they're two opposite ends of the spectrum in many ways, because in one hand, we're trying to be more sustainable. On the other hand, we're trying to work out how the robots are going to be taking over and changing things, and actually trying to balance those two totally different things, I think is going to be interesting. I don't know what the answers are going to be, particularly when it comes to the AI stuff. I've been myself looking into it. I had a conversation with another venue this week about whether or not I felt they needed an AI chatbot on their website, or whether that was going to be outdated in a few months. And I was like, honestly, AI changes so quickly and so rapidly at the moment. No one knows what is going to be the thing in 12 months' time yet.
And I think ultimately, you know, with weddings, still an experience where you want to talk to people, you know, and that's hospitality, right? Regardless. And I think, you know, use AI, this is how I look at it now, use AI to support you and make you more efficient, but you don't want to lose that personal touch. And I think if the industry went down that route, it'd be really sad. But I think if it can help you, great, but you still want to talk to people, and you know, there is that element of emotional kind of touch points and planning your wedding and executing your wedding. But yeah, I'm really excited by it. I think it's scary for sure. It scares me, but I'm really excited to see how that evolves.
Fantastic. Now, Richard, before I let you go, I always end my podcast with the same question. So I'm going to pose that to you now. And it's, what's one thing you personally wish you'd known sooner in business?
I think not so much maybe in business, but for me, I think coming back into smaller independent business, the biggest thing for me, if I could go back in my last 5 years back at Mulberry, and Mulberry is, like I say, I was in hotels, this is more wedding venue, is, you know, the importance of getting out there and networking and speaking to different professionals, because you don't want to get stale. So my biggest thing, I reckon, you know, maybe a couple of years ago, I wish I made more of an effort to get out there and see what's happening in the industry and talk to like-minded people, because otherwise, yeah, you don't want to be getting stale, and it can be a bit lonely, you know, because you're the guy at the top who's meant to be leading this team. So that's probably something I wish I did sooner when I went back into the smaller independent businesses, because you haven't got a board of directors above you that are pushing you and challenging you who specialize in certain kind of disciplines. So that's the thing for me.
Absolutely. It's so important to get out there, to keep learning, to keep growing, and to meet other people, and to find those people that can help you move forward. I meet so many people as well in our industry who've, you know, gone with some website company or gone with an SEO company or something that doesn't understand our industry and has taken loads of money from them. And then they come back and they're like, oh, I wish I'd asked a few more people first for some recommendations.
I could have gone out and spent £15,000-£20,000 on a new website. And then a few months later, gone, oh, have you AI optimized this? I'd be like, oh, okay, because you know, I just haven't had conversations with people in a room at a champagne reception in London. You think, oh, you know, it's just stuff like that. I think it's just so important.
Yes, so important. Richard, it's been such a pleasure both working with your team at Marlbury House and having you on this podcast. I'm sure we're going to do more together over the coming months and years. But I appreciate your time and thank you for being here.
Oh, thank you, Becca. It's been a pleasure. Thank you for asking me.
Such a great conversation with Richard. Really interesting to hear all about a venue from the GM's perspective. Like I said, at the beginning of the episode, often we talk to people who are lower down the chain. Maybe you're the wedding coordinator, maybe you're the salesperson and you get frustrated at your GM. Well, maybe go and get them to listen to this episode and learn how that culture can filter down from the top. I'll see you next time.